Men, if you've lost your hair, it doesn't mean you can't find it again. Try Hims Hair Loss Solutions and you'll be joining hundreds of thousands of subscribers who found their hair again. It can be hard for men to deal with hair loss, even though it is common. Luckily, I'm here to provide you with a solution so you don't even have to talk about it. Through Hims, you can restore your hair by accessing their personalized hair loss solutions. Men value many different things about their appearance. But if you're a guy who really cares about your hair and find that it's slowly going away, you might be feeling discouraged when you look in the mirror. And that's where Hims comes in. Check out their personalized hair loss solutions, and you can start seeing your hair grow back in as little as 3 to 6 months. Hims provides you with convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients, like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions, and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel, because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken Bakusic, and we're here to continue our expectations series going in. Again, if you have been following this series, I hope you have. One offensive player, one defensive player every night. Different analyst every night. We've had will have 29 different analysts to do these shows by the time we're done. Today, we're going to talk about David Ajabo from the defense and Josh Jones, the lineman acquired this offseason. And joining us is Jason Smith of Huddled Up Films. Jason, how you doing?
Doing very well, Ken. Thank you very much for having me, and great series. I look forward to this one every year now.
I appreciate that. It's a lot of fun, that's for sure. And I really appreciate the very wide range of viewpoints we get on this, and the support from the entire analyst community, including you, in terms of putting this together. So much appreciated. Why don't we start with a plug of your channel, what you have out there. What have you done recently?
Sure. It's kind of quiet on the channel during the summertime. So what I have up there is highlights, which are basically player cut-ups, positive play cut-ups of every single player on the roster. So talking about offensive linemen and defensive guys is really where my channel comes in handy. There are a ton of wide receiver, quarterback, running back highlights. But if you want to see a guy like Josh Jones, he's on the channel. I have a cut-up of his snaps week 1 versus Baltimore for Houston. He was thrust into an emergency role, I believe got the starting call the week of the game. Started at left guard, moved to right tackle. So just research stuff like that on the channel is there. You want to check out Tavius Robinson's first year. You want to check out where Kyle Hamilton's probably the best package I put together. See where he's making his plays from the slot as opposed to strong safety. So a lot to keep you busy during the summer. And then, of course, when the season rolls around, more regular content on the channel.
All right, well, fantastic. I think you segued us in pretty good with the talk about the cut-ups of Josh Jones. Let's start with him. 27 in June, entering his fifth season. Already kind of has not had a particularly clean path in the NFL, starting with 3 years in Arizona, which is not a good thing when you're drafted number 73 overall. You really expect to play out your first contract and then go somewhere and probably make some money. He ended up getting picked up by Houston for his fourth year. And then a $1.8 million one-year deal with the Ravens. So this, in a way, might be about the last shot he gets in the NFL. He might have one more. But you know, he really needs to make something happen in this season.
I think, in you know, a lot of times with draft picks, where they're picked gives them more chances. So if he were a first-round pick, for instance, teams seem to be more willing to take chances on this guy. I mean, he was – or when the players like that, he was picked a pick after Justin Madubuike. So Ravens picked Madubuike, Arizona picked Josh Jones. So just to give you perspective, what a nice pick.
Is the story of Arizona and Baltimore's draft picks over the last quarter century in terms of relative value.
I got a kick out of that because I went back and was looking, okay, is he an early third round pick? Or was he middle or late? And there's Justin Madubuike's name right next to his. So that was a note I made. But, yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, when we get to the good and the great, you know, not to spoil anything, but, you know, how he bodes for the future is kind of where I'm measuring good and great with Josh Jones, because offensive linemen don't have any stats. I mean, I think that his future contract is going to determine what kind of season he had with the Ravens.
Okay. All right. Well, that's certainly a way to look at this. There are definitely some things that I want to see out of him specifically, but we'll talk about that. Right now, I think the contract is indicative of probably gambling on tackle money. You know, the Ravens have got a guy they think might be able to contribute as a tackle. I think he's probably more likely to contribute on the right side than the left. You could even envision a place where he would start the season at right tackle for the Ravens this year, with it taking Rosengarten a time to assimilate to the game and then probably getting the job at some point during the year. I don't think we're going to see Fa'alele get the starting role there, but who knows? And I don't think McCary will be anywhere but left tackle for this season in all likelihood, meaning he'll play as needed at left tackle. Hopefully it's not very much. And I really hope he doesn't spend time in any other position. How do you see that breaking down in terms of how the Ravens will set themselves up?
This is a great question, and this is something that I think no matter who's – or one of the more debatable part, I think for both of these guys, Ajabo and Josh Jones, Ken, you and I are probably going to disagree on a lot of things, and I think listeners are going to strongly disagree with either one of us because the range of outcomes for these two guys are just so wide. Me personally, I think that Josh Jones was brought here to be a swing guard as insurance for Ben Cleveland and Andrew Voorhees. I feel like, you know, that's where he was running, by the way, in mandatory training camp as well. But I think McCary, they want him as insurance for Ronnie Stanley. I think in an ideal world, Fa'alele keeps himself in the running enough to at least be a backup option at right tackle. But I think that, you know, with Voorhees being unproven and Cleveland being mostly unproven, that Josh Jones was brought here to be a swing guy in this rotation. So that's kind of how I see his role and, you know, the PFF grades. And if you want to respond to that.
I would agree. I think it's left guard, right guard, and right tackle are the three positions we could see Josh Jones at. I don't think we'll see him at left tackle, even though he's played some there, obviously in college, but also in the NFL, some with the Cardinals. I don't think we end up seeing him there. And the guard position is a little more up in the air. Obviously, two of the three positions that the Ravens are replacing this year are at guard.
And there's no depth there, Ken. So there's not a Patrick McCary and even a Fa'alele at guard for the Ravens. I believe Tayshaun Manning would be the fourth guard on the roster. So we don't have much depth behind the the Voorhees in Cleveland.
Falele has spent some time, by the way, in guard at the OTA. So it's I'm not sure that that's where he would likely end up. But yeah, you're right. Tayshaun Manning might be the next man up there. I don't think that's a bad thing at all. They kept Manning around for a year. It was kind of surprising that the Ravens made it through the year without needing him, I thought, this last year.
It was. And again, I know that there are grades out there that show Josh Jones in his limited time. What do we have here, Ken? 21 starts for Jones in 4 years. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're not getting a huge sample size, but the numbers would tell you the grading is that he's a better tackle. He's far better at tackle than guard. But I think the way the roster is constructed for the Ravens, that they brought him in to compete and give them some insurance, even for specifically Andrew Voorhees, I would think, you know, if health and that kind of thing and never starting a game in the NFL, never playing a snap in the NFL, that's why Josh Jones is here. But there are arguments for that where he could be our best right tackle coming out of training camp if Rosengarten's not ready. Yep. to start right away. So I definitely see that point as well.
Could be a strength and anchor issue with Rosengarten. He's got the feet to play right tackle. He's got the feet to play left tackle. The issue is anchor with Roger Rosengarten. So if it was an issue in the national championship game against some pretty middling pass rushers, it's going to be a bigger issue in the NFL, needless to say, in terms of him getting set. So the Ravens don't have a full year to wait to see who Roger Rosengarten is, but I have a feeling it might be a full year before he's really ready to produce at a league average or higher level in the NFL.
I hope not. I think just one small point. I know the show's about Josh Jones, but
no, that's okay.
I would say that the bull rush for me is less of a concern for a right tackle than a left tackle because it's in the quarterback's vision. So if you want to die a slow death, and Lamar's going to be able to see that, and if, you know, Rosengarten has the feet to at least be on the guy, even if he's getting pushed back into Lamar's lap, Lamar can make something happen. And we've seen with other linemen, Ken, their best years are here. I mean, mm-hmm. I saw Orlando Brown with Kansas City and Cincinnati. We saw Bradley Bozeman have a career year here, go barely oh, play wow. Carolina. No idea how Ben Powers, but I mean, Joe D is just so wonderful. And I think Lamar Jackson has a lot to do with that as well. So my concerns with Roger Rosengarten because of his great feet, I don't worry about the bull rush as much. Now, if he's, you know, was at left tackle and is getting strip sacks, you know, causing strip sacks, that would be a little more of a concern for me.
You know, that's actually where Stanley has excelled using exactly that technique, even when he was a better lineman. So, you know, obviously Stanley didn't have a particularly good year. He's very self-effacing at the podium, which I thought was good. But if you go back to 2019, when he was great and he was an all-pro player, he was still giving up a fair amount of slow death pressure with that great mirror being a significant part of it. So while I'm okay, I don't disagree with what you're saying for most quarterbacks in terms of that pressure coming from the front side. I don't think it's that much of a difference left or right if you're getting well-mirrored pressure. Jackson is pretty good with it. So I think right. You're probably right that Rosengarten can deal with it. And maybe he can even play at left tackle for the Ravens at some point. Or maybe they have to find another solution next year. And unfortunately, right. the landing strip in terms of time gets a lot shorter. And in terms of what options they really have next year, if they need to find a different left tackle than Rosengarten, and the one thing they absolutely cannot afford to do is not know if they need a different left tackle than Rosengarten in 2025. Absolutely. Hope for the best, prepare for the worst.
Absolutely. Well said, Ken.
All right. So he's mixed his time between left guard, left tackle, right tackle at the NFL level. He played the first 3 weeks, left guard, left tackle this last year, and then he was shut down for the season. And I don't know if there was any sort of a nagging injury involved, but he didn't play well. So, it was a case where he was certainly in a position where he probably should have been sat down. I want to get back to his feet. I want to talk about, you know, some of his technique issues. But the thing that lingers like a black cloud over his play for his entire career is the penalties. And he's just been awful at that, worse than Simpson. So 1,755 NFL snaps. He's been penalized 25 times. That's one every 70.2 snaps. You remember the big thing with Simpson was been penalized once every 95.4 snaps in his time prior to coming to Baltimore, and then once every 95.5 snaps when he came to Baltimore. So it was, you know, it was going to be a long time like 1,000 years before he became good. In the case of Josh Jones, he's already being penalized 36% more than John Simpson. Now, admittedly, he's played some tackle and Simpson hasn't, so he should be maybe a little bit more penalized, but Simpson's rate was incredibly high, so to be penalized 36% more than Simpson is awful. Just got a little more information on penalties. I'm going to monologue here for just a second. I apologize for doing that, but 2020, no penalties, but only 54 snaps. 2021, 5 offensive holding, 2 illegally downfield, 5 false starts that resulted in 2 stall drives and 2 declined. So, by the way, decline is about as bad as a stall drive, because the defense has basically taken a result that's better for them, and it often happens on a third down or on a play that decides whether you're going to get the first or not. 2022, 5 more offensive holding calls, 1 illegally downfield, 1 illegal formation. All of those are declinable fouls. So that's very bad. Then he had 2 false starts, 4 stall drives in that group. Last year, he barely played. He only played basically 3 games plus a handful of snaps, 3 offensive holding, 1 false start, and 4 more stalled drives on 4 penalties. So it doesn't get any worse than that. This has got to be fixed. And, you know, we're coming off a year where John Simpson, it wasn't fixed for him.
It wasn't. And when I looked at that, what stuck out to me, was last year, 3 holding penalties and I think it was like 100 and some snaps. So those are the killers. I mean, if you false start, I can kind of live with that. You know, if you're playing well and you false start a little bit, okay, I can kind of, but when you're holding that, those are drive killers. Those are drive killers.
I can't live with any post snap or declinable foul, because the illegal formation is not post snap, but it's declinable. So it's causing a potential problem for your team where you give the defense the option. So the IDPs, I'm a Gestapo about, you know, the Ravens need to find a way to stop that, because Jackson is a player who's liberally using the time and linemen can't afford to guess on what's going on and get illegally downfield. So I think it's the most dangerous thing about the Josh Jones experiment, is putting him on the field and seeing if he can avoid some key penalties, because so far his career just hasn't done it.
Agreed. That's my main worry with him, because I feel like at left guard specifically, you know, you could make an argument on offense that that's one of the least important position. I mean, they're all, but look at what Bradley Bozeman did here, career year. Look what Ben Powers has done here. You know, if you have a good right guard play and you have good tackle play and you have a smart center, you can have a pretty good line, especially with Lamar as a quarterback. You can get by with some average play, but just to go back to the penalties again, it's just going to keep coming up. That's the one thing we cannot stand for at left guard. I mean, John Simpson had his penalties. He also had a ton of highlight blocks. You talk about from the channel, you want to see him move people and pancake people. He did, but at unfortunate times, it just cost us drives. You know, 10-yard holding penalties, it's almost as bad as a sack.
Yeah, it can be worse, but yes, it is right. It's very bad. Let's get back to who he is as a blocker. I don't want to you know, debate Simpson with you about here, because I think he had certainly some pluses and minuses as a blocker. But Jones, right, I think, is a pretty average pass blocker overall. I know PFF has graded him pretty generously, I would say, for his career from what I've seen. And the other thing I'd say is that rolled into that is a significant underweight on penalties. So if you look at the PFF grades, caveat emptor, they have a much lower negative score on a penalty than I would place in my offensive line scoring. So I guarantee you, he would not nearly score as well if I went back and did every single one of the games in his career. But it's it's just something to think about if you're looking at PFF grades as the main alternative. And I know you look at a lot of film, Jason, so I'm not really suggesting that's the case. And in terms of traits, you know, I think the two things that really stand out is. I don't think his feet are really a great strength. I think he'll be able to get by at left guard within the Ravens system, because they've taught a lot of kind of average athletes to do that. There is a lot of talk in his draft profile about being able to go out and being a guy you can trust to make reach blocks, to get out of his stance quickly, to be going to the play side and making a block, where he's got some distance to travel to make for it. So guys who make a lot of good reach blocks are generally good zone blockers. How would you rate him in that category?
I would say in that category, I think that's his strength in run blocking, but I don't see him as a plus run blocker from what I've seen overall. I think he's a better pass blocker than he is run blocker, but he does have the feet, the ability, just kind of the instincts, the body control, I would say, to be able to, you know, lead the way where if you're running right on a stretch zone, where if he's the left guard, yeah, he can come across and reach that one tech, a bigger guy who's probably not as mobile, with no problem, and probably get away on that play with being able to wall that player off. So, yes, I think in the run game, that's his strength. As far as locating second level, the power stuff, being able to, like, a people mover, kind of the opposite of what we saw from Simpson in that, where Simpson, if he really lowered his pads he could torque people to the ground. So a different style.
As good as, you know, Simpson certainly did some things well. I think he was probably a little bit better pass blocker as well. In fact, I thought he was a little bit better pass blocker than Zeitler this last year, who played very well for the whole year. But with Simpson, he had significant balance issues that I don't think will necessarily be the problem for Josh Jones. But I think that if you look at who I would still project to be the starting left guard, right guard combo, I still think it's Vorhees Simpson when all is said and done and they start the season. I know they've been trying different combinations and whatnot, but I expect Vorhees to be the guy at left guard. I expect Simpson to be the guy at right guard.
You mean those Cleveland?
I'm sorry. You're right. Cleveland. that's a good point. But those are two very large, very powerful men, and it makes a lot of sense to have both of those guys next to Linderbaum. It could be potentially an outstanding interior line combination if those three guys can find the continuity and find the rapport they need. In the Ravens system, you know, when they have the double teams worked and often two at the same time along the line of scrimmage, you're really talking about either being able to climb or being able to hold the back end of a double team. And both those guys are capable of both. And in fact, whoever needs to climb is perfectly capable of getting that player off balance as well. It is a little bit of a weakness in Linderbaum's run game. It's probably the only complaint I have about him as a run blocker. But I think having two very large men next to him bodes very well for the Ravens' run game.
Absolutely, absolutely. I'm excited about the possibilities for this run game because of the versatility of the guys, even though they're unproven. And then not only that, Derrick Henry can run every run in the book and run it well. He runs with patience when he needs to on slow developing plays, those outside stretch zone runs, and he can hit the hole hard. And so, you know, like debating with others, or actually have found a lot of people that agreed with me. If JK had been healthy last year, I think he would have been the clear number one running back because Monken could run any kind of run with JK and he could execute it. Whereas last year it was like, okay, Gus is running this kind of run. Justice are running the outside kind of stuff. Very two different run blockers. So I think that Henry is going to help this line as far as, okay, we can play to the line strengths as well with Derrick Henry against this opponent who maybe struggles against this kind of run to this side. We have guys that can cover that responsibility, and we have a running back who can execute. So I think that it all kind of works hand in hand there with the run game. And Josh Jones, I would still say his pass blocking is his calling card. That's the reason he was drafted in the third round. Mm-hmm. But his feet overall and his body control overall look pretty good to me, which is part of why I'm baffled by the penalties. Well, you know, from my experience, I'm watching tape and of guys who look like they're pretty under control, you know, look like they have pretty good feet, but rack up penalties is that they're panickers. So when they do get beat, their recovery skills aren't great. And they're, you know, they don't know when to give up.
Yeah.
They're just going
to run play in particular.
Right. They're just going to keep the hand there for that extra split second. And the official sees the jersey pull. And it just seems like those unnecessary, like you're already beat, buddy. Just you've done a job. You've got in the way. You've slowed your guy down. Don't try to play it, be a hero and get called for a penalty. know when to say when. So I don't know. You know, I haven't seen enough of Josh Jones to know that's the case, but his skill set tells me that that's probably where he gets himself into trouble.
Yeah, and I didn't go back and look at his individual penalties, which is something that's often is a fun thing to do. Nobody will put together like all the drops for a receiver. We need that kind of thing for college tape. We need somebody that automatically puts together all the drops so you can index them and bring them up at once on your computer. And maybe they've got that somewhere. Maybe some system has that. Or PFF probably has where the drop occurs.
Football Reference, it just basically it splits them into holding, false starts, and then sometimes they'll have other. You know, so that's about the best breakdown that I could find personally.
Well, if you go to NFL GSIS, they have the actual game they occurred in, what the fouls were, and all that. So it's easy enough to find, and then you can go back to the place. It's not like I can't find those plays. It's just a research project to look at 25 penalties that have occurred over 3 years. And
but good luck in college doing for college players,
yes,
right?
Good point. Yeah, good point.
Right.
Physical lineman, and he should be at his size, 6'5", and about 320 when he's drafted, maybe a shade under. He lists at 310. The guy looks a little bigger than that, especially since he's at 6'5". I don't really think of him as being a big, super lean guy, but he does have some physicality to his game. I think one of the things I like about him as a pass blocker is he's not afraid to strike the opposing lineman. And I'm not going to take either position. And Michael Crawford was on the show espousing what I'll call the Fa'alele method. And there was a particular offensive line coach who said, the offensive lineman should not do anything until because he's giving away his balance until the pass rusher does something. And I think it's like telling somebody you never swing at the first pitch. You definitely need to punch. You need to go for the armpit occasionally. You need to let the defensive lineman opposite you know that is a possibility, so they won't go all out for some first step move that wins as long as you don't do that. So anyway, you need to do that. I think that's part of Daniel Fa'alele's lack of success has been that he's really just a natural patty caker. Jones has a little more physicality than that. Simpson certainly tried to be more physical than that at the cost of balance a lot. So there's a happy medium in there where you can be a good offensive lineman, strike first occasionally, and not be always swinging at the first pitch.
Sure, and I think mixing up your sets and mixing up your technique can work to your advantage. I lean towards you for it. It's one of the things I liked about Rosengarten is his quick sets, and he wasn't great at it. He got beat a couple of times, but he would mix up his sets against guys and really throw them off. And if the guy's waiting too long to declare and you give him a one-handed punch, to the pads, that, to me, that's not a bad thing. You're not wasting or opening yourself up as long as you're under control. You don't want to be a leaner like John Simpson, a habitual over your knees type of guy. So I think Josh Jones does have, I would say to somebody who hasn't seen him play before, he looks the part, he looks under control. There's something in his game that hasn't clicked yet. And, considering that maybe it's the franchises he's coming from. Maybe Arizona didn't develop him like they should have. And for Houston last year, I think he was just, patchwork. They drafted a young center. They drafted another center. They had a bunch of injuries. So I wouldn't write Josh Jones off yet. I think that he has a chance to make his mark here in Baltimore this year.
I certainly hope you're right. And he's a player that I think the preseason will be critically important, because this is not a guy who necessarily gets on the field when the season begins. I mean, the Ravens have other options. Yes, he might be the third guard of the first after Voorhees in Cleveland, but he really he's not guaranteed playing time. And were he to have a really poor preseason or have bad habits in camp that piss off the coaches at some point, I think Harbaugh is the critical one to not piss off. Honestly, I think Jody will try and keep working and developing a player, but I think if you piss off Harbaugh in terms of work ethic, I think you're destined for the kennel. If I can't imagine a circumstance where Jones doesn't work hard and it works out for him as a Raven, given the tenuous nature of his career as a fifth year, you know, 1.5 times the vet minimum kind of contract he's got.
Yeah. And I think Houston traded a seventh round pick.
After three years.
Excuse me. It was a pick. They traded a fifth round pick, but included a seventh round pick, or the other Arizona included a seventh round pick. So basically Josh Jones was traded for a fifth. But it was Josh Jones in the seventh for a fifth. So, you know, the last year of a contract when a rookie who hadn't worked out, I think that his measurables and, you know, he has put on probably some decent tape out there along with some bad, some mixed tape. He'll have a chance this preseason, I think. And the, again, once again, the range of outcomes for him is just very, very large, I think, as far as where he sits on this team.
Let's jump into that. What's a good season for Josh Jones from your perspective?
The only other guard competitor of any note other than Manning would be Big Sala. You know, so that's someone else that Josh Jones has a chance to play over. Ken, don't give me that.
I don't think he's the number three guard. I'll tell you that right now. I don't see that.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of my point, is that Josh Jones is, I think right now, he's guard number three. You know, sure, he's the first guy off the bench. So he's going to have that opportunity. But go ahead, Ken. You're about to set me up.
I kind of did, I think. So what does a good season look like for you from Josh Jones? Yeah.
Good season for Josh Jones is that he signs a multi-year deal in the offseason, either here or elsewhere. So it doesn't have to – you don't have to break the bank. But if he's – solidified his NFL career to where he's not a year-to-year guy. Somebody wants to give him a three-year deal that's really a two-year deal to be a swing guard backup, whether that be here or elsewhere. I would say that you would look back at that. Would, if he has a good season, that's what he's going to get, a usable NFL lineman.
So three years, $15 million. The team has a $6 million option, let's say, in year three. That would be a win in terms of what play the Ravens get from him, probably.
Yeah, right. I mean, if he, you know, if somebody sees him, like, well, hey, man, we don't want him to start, but he can be our Pat McCary. He can be our, you know, swing player, but maybe we like him better at guard or that kind of thing. I think that would mean that he had showed enough for the Ravens, had gotten the opportunity. You would say that's a good year. I mean, we got Josh Jones off the street, and here he is signing either with us or another team, you know, as a backup.
It's a good condition. I didn't like it. I didn't put it in the good season, but I do like it. So I'll tell you what I did. I said fills in as needed at guard or tackle as a regular activation on game day and plays 200 to 350 snaps. Regardless of position, provides pass blocking at or above the league average with consideration for penalties. That's very important. It's got to be above the league average as I would score it, not as PFF would score it. I'm just going to be real clear on that. PFF underweights penalties. They're going to overweight the value of a player like Josh Jones in a way that I'm not going to agree with. So that's what my definition is here. Run blocking improves within the Ravens structure, and he learns to pull effectively from guard or tackle. That's something the Ravens have had good success doing. So I think the chance of that happening is probably at least 40%. And the hardest thing in that entire range of outcomes to happen is for the pass blocking to be at or above the league average with the penalties. I think the other stuff will probably fall into place if he can hit that standard, and the Ravens will certainly be encouraged to give him more playing time if he can meet that standard.
Sounds good.
Let's go to great.
Great. I kind of have two ideas here, if you don't mind, Ken. First would be, is in regards to the beginning of the season. And the second would be in regards to the end of the season. So I think a great start for Josh Jones, for instance, would be the Ravens Buck convention once again. And when they're talking about their starting five, it's actually a starting six. And Josh Jones is in there rotating with Andrew Voorhees at left guard. I'm going to pick left guard and say that, look, we're going to break Voorhees into the league with this left guard rotation. We've played with the rotations before. We're not afraid to do it. Josh Jones looks pretty steady. We're not sure about he's outplaying Voorhees, but we want to give Voorhees a chance. So he starts in a rotation, an unofficial starter for the Ravens. And then end of the season, he's starting a playoff game and plays well for us. If he's starting in the playoffs for the Ravens and we don't notice him, and he's not the reason people are complaining, to me, that would be great. I mean, to get a guy pretty much off the street who turns into a solid starter in the playoffs for you, that would be a great season to me. And I think he has the ability to do that, given how physical, you know, the NFL is and with the injuries that happen, that he could very well be called upon. So if Josh Jones is bailing us out in the playoffs, that's a great season for me.
Okay. Yeah, I would agree with that. I'll take that right now instead of what I've got written here. But I went to a little more detail. I said thrust into the fire due to injury and effectiveness and delivers the best season of his career to date with 500 plus snaps between guard and tackle. That wouldn't be a career best. He's had 500 snaps before, but at least one of his pass or run blocking is above the league average level. And the other is at least close to average. Now, I would really expect, given his pass, his background, that his pass blocking would be better than his run blocking. So his pass blocking is the thing that has a chance to be above average. So the real minimum standard here might be that his run blocking is average in total. And I think that's achievable with the structure of the Ravens system. So hopefully that's a good shot.
Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious, high-potency gummies, top-shelf flower, home-baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary, you can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
Men, if you've lost your hair, it doesn't mean you can't find it again. Try Hims Hair Loss Solutions and you'll be joining hundreds of thousands of subscribers who found their hair again. It can be hard for men to deal with hair loss, even though it is common. Luckily, I'm here to provide you with a solution so you don't even have to talk about it. Through Hims, you can restore your hair by accessing their personalized hair loss solutions. Men value many different things about their appearance. But if you're a guy who really cares about your hair and find that it's slowly going away, you might be feeling discouraged when you look in the mirror. And that's where Hims comes in. Check out their personalized hair loss solutions, and you can start seeing your hair grow back in as little as 3 to 6 months. Hims provides you with convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients, like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions, and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger. and you can get started now by saving when you join today. We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need, and you can work out your way on your time at any convenient location near you, most open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save. Just $1 down, $15 a month. See Home Club for details.
Yes. Dramatically reduces declinable fouls under the Ravens coaching to less than half his career rate. I cannot tolerate anything more than that. You know, he's got one every 70 snaps. He can't be any more than one every 140 snaps. That would be the highest rate that I, and even that would be actually kind of high. If he played a full season, he'd be penalized about 7 or 8 times. And we wouldn't consider that good from a guard. But at least it would be a reduction in what's happened so far, and becomes a priority re-sign. The Ravens address prior to the end of the 2024 season. I think if the Ravens in December offer him any kind of a re-signing, which would probably be a multi-year deal, then that's obviously a big win. But I like your playoff one, and I like a lot of your conditions.
You know what, Ken? I enjoyed that whole discussion on Josh Jones because I think that this one needs some talking out. And again, I think anything can happen with him. And I'm just, I really enjoy having Joe DeLisandro as the offensive line coach. I think he's just paid off so much for the Ravens. And when I heard him speak, he just doesn't seem his age, man. He sounds like a 40-year-old coach. His energy is that of a 40-year-old coach. Yeah. And he's just got so much knowledge, and he just seems to be able to relate to any type of player at any stage in their career who come here with any kind of pedigree. So that gives me hope for whoever we bring in, as a project. And just coming off of a John Simpson year where he gets $9 million a year for the Jets, it says something about, I think, Lamar Jackson and Joe DeLisandro.
I'd love to give Joe D a ton of contract for getting Simpson that money. And I'm certainly happy Simpson got it in terms of what it means for a comp pick for the Ravens. Although I think it's still, he ends up being a 6 that he ends up being. So it wasn't any real difference because the Ravens got more than they needed in terms of 6th round comp picks. But I can't really say that the Simpson experiment was a success because he didn't do the basic thing he needed to do to make Simpson an effective lineman, which was cut down on the penalties. And that really cost the Ravens in terms of Simpson, even though he certainly made some good blocks in the year. It's a lot worse to have some penalties in there. They're a lot worse than, say, 2 good blocks to have 1 penalty, especially because Simpson's penalties were almost all of the declinable sort. He wasn't getting a lot of false starts. He's getting a lot of offensive holding calls illegally downfield, spread in there, some personal foul in his career. I'm not sure he had one with Baltimore last year, but he had just an assortment of problems. Again, we don't want to talk about John Simpson over talk about him. This is about DeLisandro. And I think that one of his biggest goals for this year, if you're doing his performance review, is reduce Josh Jones's penalties.
There you go.
All right. I'm going to move on to David Ajabo.
Sure. Let's go for it.
I'll just tell you, it is fantastic to be talking about these two players because both very developmental guys, both very pivotal. And you said range of outcome is huge. Ajabo, a third year player, turns 24 in May, had only 21 snaps as a rookie and then 83 more in his second year. Of course, he missed it the entire preseason also in his first year, played the preseason in his second year, but didn't have a good preseason, really looked pretty bad, particularly against the run, I thought, in the preseason.
I remember that. It was a lot of break contain on his side, just guys getting around the corner too easily. And, part of what the Ravens are doing defensively, in a 4-man front, you're going to, those outside runs kind of hurt us all year. That's the way you're going to get to the Ravens defense when they're playing, a base nickel. But still, the ones with David Ajabo were egregious. Him crashing and not being anywhere in the area. Yeah, did individual work at mandatory minicamp, which I think is an important place to start, or at least for me here. Expected to be a full go in training camp. So with these injuries, Ken, the first point I want to make is, as fans, analysts, even guys who try to, have a rapport with some of the reporters and just try to have some information, and not that we're digging too much, but we really have no idea on some of these injuries sometimes. I mean, Ajabo, here we are in June and he's still not able to practice with the team. So that right there is concerning. Maybe they're just taking it cautiously with Ajabo, which would be smart, But again, it's when you're talking wide range of outcomes, he could still be hurt. He could never be right again. Or he's got two sacks, both of them were forced fumbles in 104 snaps, which is basically, you know, two full games worth of snaps. You know, play 55, 60 snaps on defense, not that Ajabu himself would, but total snaps. So two sacks, two forced fumbles in 104 snaps is productive. That's a 12 sack season. If you project it out. So again, just a wide range of outcome on David Ajabo, and whatever your opinion is, not just you, Ken, whatever your opinion is or expectations of him are this year, I'm not going to tell you you're crazy. Yeah. I'm going to say you could be right. You could be right.
Well, that's probably a good plan here. The first note I have on here is that he's a third year player, and we still know very little about who he is. Yeah, we got two strip sacks. That's basically what we can point to. We've got some really mediocre preseason play, and we've got generally nothing that's been exceptional as a run defender, period. And a guy who in his second year was almost exclusively used as a pass rush specialist. So, I think that's his likely role this year, is to be in there on passing downs. I think they have, with Robinson and Harrison, they have a combination they like for the base defense that they played a lot on early downs. That's also a rest players down. It could be that Isaac is their guy. It could be that they'll use more Owe on early downs. I think that won't be exclusively done, because I think Owe is the guy they can use any down. They would really be one of their best players to have on the field. So I think that, it's going to be actually a little bit difficult for Ajabo to find playing time. Now, one thing that could help him is if Adisa Isaac is not really ready to go. If he's not physically ready to go for whatever reason, not strong enough, not playing enough special teams, that he's an obvious go there. I mean, that could be a benefit for Ajabo. Ajabo himself hasn't played special teams much in the NFL, a few snaps, I think, but he really hasn't. And he needs to probably think very hard about getting a role on special teams. And it may be hard for him to get that, because I think there's a pretty good chance he's not going to be into any physical parts of training camp. When he show up, he's working on a side field. Maybe he's ready for the regular season, then we'd say. But I'll tell you, whenever there's injuries involved, it usually takes longer than they're willing to say.
Absolutely. Well, I think sometimes during the regular season, you try to over or undersell it, depending on your definition. You don't want to say somebody's going to be back in 2 or 3 weeks, and then it takes them four. And then what happened? Do you have a setback? But again, just so much unknown. I feel like with this edge group, there is a lot of, I feel very confident in projecting four players and have no idea what to expect from two. So I think that you're starting to, quote unquote, outside or edge players are Adafi Owe, Kyle Van Noy. I expect Owe to take a step up. I expect Van Noy to be Van Noy. And then, with Malik, he's going to be a good edge setter. It doesn't give you very much pass rush. I don't expect Tavius to be a big sack guy. So I think he's most like Malik. He's going to set a good edge, give you a little bit of pass.
Is Tavius's roster spot in any jeopardy, or his, more importantly, is his regular activation in any jeopardy going into year two?
That I don't have a strong opinion of because of the new kickoff rules. I really don't know. And returns. Who knows? A guy like Tavius might be blocking on kickoff returns. But and then Adisa Isaac and Ajabo, who in the world knows? That's kind of where I am with those. But like, I feel like we have a good idea from what we're going to get from those four, in Owe, Van Noy,
Harrison,
Tavius, and Harrison. Thank you. And two completely unknowns who are pretty much going to be fighting about. I do think that, Ken, I'm going to throw it to you on this. David Ajabo, I think, does have a pedigree. He does have a skill level of getting to the quarterback. Specifically, stripping the ball from a quarterback has been the specialty from, we've seen it 3 years in a row. Last year at college, first 2 years in the NFL, even with the injuries, that when he gets there, he has this really rare ability to be able to spot the ball and swat at the ball and jar it loose. So I think that they're going to want to get him on track. I think that they protect him. Maybe he doesn't have to play special teams to get active. We're like, you know what? We're going to have these 15 designated snaps. We're going to rest Oway or Van Noy, you know, and we're going to need some pressure in these snaps. Let's not go with Tavius. Let's go with David Ajabo here. Because if he gets to the quarterback, it could very well be a forced fumble.
I certainly hope it works out for Ajabo. It'd be nice. If you had to pick one that it works out for this year, the Ravens are highly incented for it to be Isaac and not Ajabo. And the reason is they got 4 years of sand in the hourglass on Isaac. It's a big freaking deal if you have a rookie break out and all of a sudden is really contributing. Now, more importantly than that, they probably want to get Isaac on the field some and see who he is. They'll have an idea from practice what they've got. He is at risk, certainly, of being inactive unless he can find that spot on special teams where he has real value. But you know, in a lot of ways, he and Ajabo were direct competitors. And that's one of the things that doesn't work out too well, that doesn't necessarily work out too well for Ajabo. I think he's at risk for that.
Yeah.
So been a really tough road for David. I don't want to minimize that in any way. What he's been through has just absolutely sucked from, you know, having a mid first round pedigree, then the injury showing up, drops all the way to 45. The Ravens pick him up on what is a perceived bargain at the time. But like anybody, when you get a rookie who's hurt, it's a risk. And it turned out to be a really bad risk with David Ajabo in terms of the
sure did. It sure did. And I believe in him as a football player too. So when we're talking about the wide range of outcomes from Ajabo, if he's not right and he can't get right, that wouldn't surprise me. And it's, you know, we don't get anything out of him or very little out of him. And maybe he's not the same guy. I could see that, but I could also see him stepping in and being, you know, one of our most talented, if not the most talented pass rusher, most productive in the opportunities that he's given to rush the passer, not talking about run defense, but just strictly get after the pass rush win rate would be a good one to where he is the guy for that. So, I mean, the spin move, the outside duck, the body control, the bend, the stripping of the football, his ability to finish, it was all there. And I just worry about his first step being drained of some, you know, some explosiveness there. Hopefully that's there, because that was my big concern in the preseason from a pass rush standpoint, was that he just looked a little bulky and maybe he was never right last year. I don't know. But as a football player, I believe in David Ajabo. I want him to get right because that ceiling is sky high. But yeah, Adisa Isaac, I don't think that the Ravens saw edge rusher as a giant need, especially to bring in a third round guy. I mean, if like a stud pass rusher was there in the first, he's the best player, you take him. But I think it was one of those things in which he was clearly the best player on the board, on their board, to where they were taking him. Because we have six guys now. And like you said, somebody's, at least one of these guys is going to be the odd man out. It's either going to be Isaac or Tavius or Ajabo come game day activations.
Yeah. And I would agree. I think there is a way the Ravens can probably keep five per week active, but I don't think they can keep six. So it really does come down to Robinson, Ajabo, and Isaac in terms of probably having one of those sit. Malik Harrison is the leader of special teams. He's not sitting. He's also the guy who can potentially come in and play the mic for you, at least to finish a game for you if Roquan got hurt. If they had to go for more than that, I think they would actually go to the street and get somebody. I don't think the guy is currently on the team. The closest they have is probably Evandy Rigby. And I don't, you know, for a lot of reasons, he may not be ready to play the pro game. So we'll
sure. Yeah. I think Malik Harrison is invaluable. Just to back you up there, not only the core special teamer, but he turned himself into a Courtney Upshaw, dare I say, type edge setter, just a butt kicker. About the highlights on my channel, you want to see him manhandle some offensive tackles. Malik Harrison can do that. It's very impressive for his size.
I think, and he really reshaped his body too to get the high 250s in terms of weight. So not a smaller guy by any stretch. He wasn't really a small Mike linebacker at all. He came out right around 240, which is big for Mikes today. But in the move to outside linebacker, he picked up some significant weight, and you can really see it on his frame now as well. So
he's always been heavy handed too, Ken. Like even at inside linebacker, he always had that pop to separate So yeah, big Malik Harrison fan, man. I'm proud of him because he didn't have the physical makeup to stick at inside linebacker, to be quick enough at inside linebacker at the NFL, and remade himself and put the nose to the grindstone in the special teams. So, you know, he's a fan favorite of mine, you know, just from a personal standpoint, the way he's found a role on this team.
He's certainly, if in terms of the Ravens, you know, legacy of special teamers who can also play some defense, he meets the standard fully. And he, you know, looks at like the Albert McClellan role of a guy, particularly McClellan, who played outside linebacker and inside linebacker, of a guy who could stick around 8 or 9 years.
You love it. I mean, you need those guys, Ken. You need those guys.
Yeah. So he's got a contract right now. He'll have another contract probably for 2 years, and he'll lead the special teams. And then at some point he'll hand over leadership of the special teams, and he'll still be around on the handshake crew, I would expect. So he's going to, he looks like a survivor to me, not a guy who's going to be gone next year. Of course, an injury could happen at any point, and reduce his effectiveness, but he's set up to earn a few dollars in the league, even though he won't probably ever really cash in the way that some second contract guys have that produce a compensatory pick.
So, Ken, I want to throw it back to you. I hope you don't mind being your show, but is there any – my question to you, friend to friend, what I would ask anybody out there at the bar, if they're reading this on Twitter, if they want to comment, is there anything from David DiJabo that you feel strongly about? Like, coming into this year, I expect DiJabo to – I don't have anything of that. What can you tell?
Yeah, let's see. Okay, I'll give you some things I don't expect him to do. I don't expect him to have to be put in a position in 2024 where he has to prove himself as a run defender. I think that job is covered. Okay, so I don't expect that. I think he basically he will rise or fall with his pass rush productivity. So I does not, to my end, he doesn't need to get a lot of sacks. He needs to get a lot of first pressures, which means he needs to get the wins that generate the potential second chance opportunities for this defense. This defense has a lot of players who clean up very well. Matabike at the top of that list, Van Noy, good cleanup player. But Ajabo could be one of them. Ajabo could be a cleanup player too. But if he has a wide base of pressures that narrows at the top, you know, so lots of pressures, fewer quarterback hits, and relatively few sacks. That's fine by me if he's making his pressure felt. So I think that's where he's going to live or die. I don't honestly believe he's going to be a special teams performer. I think they'd probably be a situational pass rusher and a guy. If they have anything for him on special teams, it would be something in the kick block game. So that's usually taller men. So Tavius Robinson actually has a place on that unit with Brent Urban and others who are, you know, good specialists at that. But, you know, anyway, that's really about all I would have. We don't know who this guy is. I would caution anybody who's thinking about David Ajabo is he's no longer the 10th overall pick or whatever you might have projected him to be in 2022. He's now a third year player, and both your ceiling and your floor should be much lower than they were before. The ceiling on David Ajabo, you think you said it was sky high. I don't want to tell you what you think. I don't see a really sky high ceiling for David Ajabo. I think whatever playing time he gets will be under a significant eyedropperization from the Ravens this year, meaning they're going to restrict his snaps pretty significantly. I don't think there's a way he wins run snaps. So I think it's all about pass rush productivity on the place he's in.
This year, maybe not, but at 24 years old, I think I think he still has that potential to be a double digit sack guy.
Okay.
Not this year, but years forward.
Let's jump right into it. Talk about what a good and a great season is. How about what does a good season look like for you from David?
Okay, I'm gonna set it up like this. Last year, Jadeveon Clowney, 654 snaps. Kyle Van Noy missed 3 games. He had 486. Adafi Owe missed 4 games. He had 437. I'm Tavius Robinson, just to throw him in there, 335 snaps. Okay, so for me, a good season from David Ajabo as he plays 400 snaps. I think that would say, man, we got 400 snaps. That means he's earning that playing time. He's not going to be, if he's getting 400 snaps, he's one of our better pass rushers. So that's where a good season comes from there. Durability, he can miss. If he misses a few games, Ken, That's fine. Adafi Away missed a few games. He had over 400. Van Noy missed three games. He had almost 500 snaps. So 400 for David Ajabo is good for me.
Okay. I'm good with that. I would probably put his total lower, but I'll tell you how I got there. A good season to me, 60th percentile again, gels with Chuck Smith to become a valued situational pass rusher. I'm not trying to put any specific numbers on that. Delivers some initial pressures as well as some cleanup play. And again, this is a good season. We notice him on the field doing these things. That's a you know, in some ways a good season because he's not hurt. Nose for the football remains with the big club move. No specific requirements for pressure sacks, but he's considered one of the most important elements of the pass rush all season. So he's a guy you have in a pass rush situation that you want to get on the field. I would say if he averages 20 to 25 snaps per game, that would be fine with me for a good season. So in 17 games, that would be between 340 and 425, which would be right in your range. I think, you know, he's the kind of guy who might miss a game or two or be inactive for a game or two. And we might be talking about right around 300 snaps. And I think I would still consider it a good ceiling. But again, I've probably lowered the floor for the guy and also lowered the ceiling.
There you go. So great season for me, Ken, would be that 400 snaps. In addition, I want to see half dozen sacks and the type of season to where he is closing out some games for us. So what I mean by that is it's the end of the half, and no matter what the score is, it's the end of the half. The other team has the ball at their own 25, minute and a half left. They have two timeouts, and David Ajabo is coming out there with either Adafi Owe or Van Noy. But he's in that mix where he's closing out games as a pass rusher for us. He's on the field in those passing situations. And I think with that, if he's has earned that kind of playing time, that he's definitely a half dozen sack guy. I think that his ability to finish is very good. And I don't think that goes away, even if he's a step slower. His body control and his ability to find the ball carrier, find the ball, is one of the things that made him special coming out of college. So above the shoulders, a smart player, an instinctual player, you don't lose that with injury. So yeah, I'm going to say 400 snaps, you know, at least a half dozen sacks, and he's in those situations to close out the half and close out the game for us.
I would love to see that. I had a great season as we regularly comment on the violence of his hands. I think that's very important, by the way, in his game.
I like that.
We didn't really talk about that, but the violent hand play critical to Ajabo's success at pass rusher. Compound moves take a step forward and are well-timed. That's Chuck Smith right there. That's one of his big, obviously, projects for the year is Ajabo and getting him right. Pass rush productivity creates a good problem with Owe, Isaac, Ajabo, and Van Noy all deserving of pass down snaps. So if Ajabo is the one closing out games with the kind of interior pressure the Ravens have, remember they have three guys from the interior in Pierce, Jones, and Matabike who can certifiably have earned their playing time on third down. And the Ravens didn't play very much rush nickel and almost no race car this entire last season. So it's not like you're going to get three outside linebackers on the field too often.
And not only that, Ken, we saw Matabike defensive end, and Travis Jones had a strip sack at defensive end, caused an interception. I think, is that the one Queen brought back when Travis Jones hit the arm of the quarterback and Queen returned it? I believe so. Anyway, Travis Jones was on the edge and hit the quarterback on that play. So if anything, their snaps are getting taken away by these defensive linemen out there. It's a lot of competition at the edge.
It's a good problem to have, but it probably means a lower, you know, top end for what a Ajabo can do on the year, unfortunately. What do I have? Pass rush productivity creates a good problem. Went through that. We get at least a glimpse of run defense that would project him to 50%+ of the snaps in year four. So this is a great season. 80th percentile. Ajabo is really living up to the hype. And we're seeing a player we got to get on the field in year four. And part of that obviously would be being a pretty good run defender. And that'll help them make some tough decisions after 2024 in terms of maybe moving on from Van Noy because he certainly is where he is in terms of age, or potentially moving on from Tavius Robinson if he can't be the guy, or repositioning Malik Harrison again outside of the outside linebacker spot if Ajabo could give you a good compound effort on early downs. They have some options. None of them, you know, we're not excited about getting rid of any of these players. I'm just saying gives the Ravens options in that way. He has to have a good number of one-on-one wins, a season of 6+ sacks with 2+ forced fumbles, and 30 snaps per game. So I think we're going to end up being pretty similar in this group. I'm asking for a lot, but I'm also asking for him to be looking forward to 25 and making the Ravens think.
Yeah, and I think good and great with Ajabo is really in the eye of the beholder again, because have you written him off, or is he still one of your favorite Ravens? If you're listening out there and you think, man, this guy, if he can just put it together, he can be an all pro. I mean, I'm sure there are people listening out there that think that this guy is great. And there's probably people out there listening that think that, look, man, he's been hurt his whole career, that we can't expect anything out of this guy. So, I mean, within the wide range, there's a wide range, even wider range with David Ajabo. I'm rooting for him because obviously, you know, I believe in him, his football skills, his football IQ, his variety of his rush. I think he'd be great on stunts, Ken. Just, you know, he's able to put his foot in the ground really well to be able to crash in on quarterbacks and finish. It's a crowded house, though, man. Six edge players. And then Malik Ham is the seventh, is somebody that they really liked last year enough to keep him on the roster. I asked Sarah Ellison what she thought. She's like, look, you just throw them all out on the field in the preseason and let them sort themselves out. Like, she didn't have a good feel for how this is going to go either.
You do have extra tools. And with a player like Ajabo, if they suddenly decided, you know what, I'm not sure if he's going to be ready for week one, they can stick him on the new one of the new IR slots, or handshake somebody off again, as they've done many years, for maybe two additional slots beyond the 53 plus two. To get the maybe 53 plus four, if you cut Brent Urban and bring him back, for example, you can have Ajabo sitting, return him in week six, and it defers your problem, which I would not put as a 0% chance right now. I think there's actually a reasonable chance they defer the start to Ajabo's season coming off the injury. I don't think there's anyone else who falls into this category currently. It's always possible somebody else gets there, you know, during camp or the preseason. Adisa Isaac could be played. You know, sometimes there's always risk of a soft tissue injury or other injury that would keep him out for a few weeks, and they're better off starting on IR. It defers your decision and makes it so you don't have to sort as quickly. Now, the one thing with these two additional spots, and I'm really pissed about this part, they did not add any additional DTR spots. So you can put two players on the edge of your roster on IR to start the season without losing them for season ending purposes. But you can, and the Ravens always did that anyway by means of this handshake group that they would cut and then return people like Worley and Urban and whatnot. They've given that privilege now to every team in the NFL, something the Ravens had really mastered the use of. And now it is a real value component to not having to make your roster decisions, because there will be attrition at outside linebacker typically. There will be injuries that occur, and when they do occur, hey, you have a replacement. But you only have eight spots still to bring people back from IR and you got to be careful using those, because you can run out of those by the end of the year. In fact, the Ravens used all eight this last year, including some very creative usage to have basically an inside linebacker ready for 3 weeks in the form of Josh Ross, who they said, oh, well, I guess we don't have a spot for him at the end of those 3 week window of practice, and then he reverted to season ending IR. So the Ravens are very adept at managing the edge of that roster. And frankly, the reduction to eight returns from IR is a cannon directly aimed at the Ravens front office.
I appreciate you, Ken, because I saw that come across the timeline, the rules, and I was thinking about you. And that's the kind of stuff that, quite frankly, I lean on you for, to really get some clarification, make sure I'm reading it right, and to apply that to how we've done things. You know, I'm more of a tape guy and that kind of thing, but that's important stuff for sure.
I appreciate that, man. Well, anyway, great talking football always with you, Jason, whenever we get the chance. I know we always have a long and spirited discussion. I am so glad that you picked these two players, where there's a real question about who these guys even are. And, you know, first of all, I talked to someone with depth of knowledge like you, which I really appreciate. Beyond that, I think you have very good judgment about, you know, where the Ravens might use these guys, where they might be utilized. And I just appreciate hearing. I always appreciate talking football.
Me too, Ken. This was therapeutic for me, because I have as many questions as more questions than answers for this. And last year, I want to say, I did really good with Martavius Robinson being a good plus run defender prediction. I don't know if you remember that. Good. You do so many shows, but I actually believed in him because I saw a technical problem that could be fixed, and I saw the 1-2, and son of a gun, here we are a year later, and we're both talking as a plus run defender, and Clowney played his role in the playoffs. They've really kind of shrunk things down, but very proud of Tavius last year. I don't have any strong feelings about either one of these guys other than the fact that I go against the grain and I think Josh Jones is here to play left guard.
Okay. I here to start at left guard for the
I think he's insurance. I think that if he has a John Simpson type preseason, not to bring Simpson up yet again, but he nailed the preseason last year, mm-hmm. that they might start him in a rotation with Voorhees and let Voorhees get his feet wet and let them sort it out if they don't have a starting five. So,
I'll say the same thing I did about Voorhees also applies to Isaac, applies to Voorhees. And that is that if you can get a rookie who can play, you make every move necessary to make that happen. And on the offensive line, yes, it's possible he's not ready. In Andrew Voorhees' case, it's not a matter of grown man strength. He's probably the strongest player on the whole team. So, or very close to it.
It's amazing looking at his body too. Like in a press conference, mm-hmm. like his shoulders kind of look like your mind. Like he must have like the largest chest muscles. I'm serious. Go look at the interview and you look at Lamar's shoulders and he's got these huge bumps by his neck, even mm-hmm. when he's trimmed down. And here's the strongest man on the team. And he looks like a regular guy, but he is strong, strong, Ken. I mean, 38 reps with a torn, that's something else. Yeah.
So you and I mean, we there's reasons why we only do the audio on these shows.
That's right. But
we are, both of us are built like analysts as opposed to being built like.
That's right. I work on my analyst build all the time. That's right.
Very good. All right. Jason, you can follow him at Huddle It Up Films on Twitter. I want to make sure you get out that. And he gave the channel at the top of the episode, so we won't repeat that. Other folks out there, if you'd like to do a film study short with me, please hit me up. DMs are always open on Twitter. I'd love for you to be on a show. The Expectation Series is all taken care of. We have the Recollection Series if you want to talk about a player. And I also have a Concerns series coming up. And Jason, I'll be asking you for a concern on that. But if you're never been on the show, would like to be, and want to talk about a very specific Ravens concern going into this season, I'd love to hear from you. I think it would make probably some fine discussion, and always looking for new people to talk football with. Jason, thanks again for coming on.
Thank you, Ken. Till the next time, buddy. Take care.
I'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.